Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025 The Game. Caroline Fenton is here. Big Preds Day. And I've got a Big Preds take in about 30 minutes. But, so the big football news today is going to be the Jags are going to sign Tim Tebow, right? That is not nearly as important as the fact that the Colts have signed a left tackle. Now, again, he's coming off of an Achilles surgery, and I still don't love their quarterback play, and I don't bow down to Chris Ballard like everybody else does, but the Colts signing a left tackle is infinitely more important to the football world and to all of us, or should be more important than this idea of signing Tim Tebow.
Because this left tackle will play.
Yeah, because they don't have a left tackle. So now they have a left tackle.
But, well, yes, but he will play as opposed to Tim Tebow, who likely will not.
No, he won't play. But this today I saw. The Athletic put out their post-draft power rankings. Now, the thing about the NFL offseason is that every year, it always kind of has this wild and weird turn of groupthink. It's kind of like the NFL draft. All of a sudden, Elijah Moore was considered a second-round player, starts hearing some buzz about Elijah Moore, and then all of a sudden, now everybody's mocking him in the first round. Now they're saying he's the fourth best receiver. And all these people who had him ranked behind Kadarius Toney, had him ranked behind Rashad Bateman, they're now saying, no, he's ahead of him. Then the draft comes, Elijah Moore goes in the second round, behind Bateman, behind Toney. So, like, you know, that talking season will do that to you. The Athletic put out their post-draft power rankings. And I glance through, see what I see. And it pretty much every year is the same it was last year. You know, how did things finish last year? Number one in their Athletic power rankings, Tampa Bay. Number two, Kansas City. Number three, Buffalo. Number four, Green Bay. The final four of the NFL last year, by the way, was Tampa Bay, Green Bay, Kansas City, and Buffalo. Then it's the team that, you know, had a nice season last year and adds a big-time player. The LA Rams are sixth. They added Matthew Stafford. But then it becomes this groupthink where all of a sudden there's going to be some hot team every year that everybody talks about. And then there's going to be some teams that people dump on. So I look at this and I want to see where the Titans are. And again, it's all the usual suspects. Seattle's at 8. Cleveland in the top 10. Then I see Atlanta at 11. And I'm starting to think, okay, these rankings are getting a little funky. Miami, Pittsburgh. So now we're at 13, 14. Now we're in the range where the Titans truly belong. I mean, even though I probably think the Titans are better than the Miami Dolphins, I certainly think the Titans are in the middle of the league. So we get there. Minnesota, Indianapolis, Denver.
That one kind of threw me for a loop.
Denver doesn't have a quarterback. Dallas. Now again, Dallas is perpetually overrated every year. Washington, the Saints with no Drew Brees. Number 20 come the Tennessee Titans. They have the Titans ranked 20th in the NFL. They have the Dallas Cowboys ranked ahead of the Titans. As we have mentioned many times on this show, and I like the Cowboys, I do, but they stink. They stunk last year, and the ESPN FPI football analytics said Dallas was a top five team, and I fought tooth and nail all the way to the analytic people's desks. They still, this year, Dallas overrated again, but that's neither here nor there. The Athletic writes, quote, "It may be hard for the Titans to be as good as they were last year when they went 11-5. They were 7-2 in one score games and had the NFL's sixth best injury luck. First of all, they lost their starting left tackle in October for the rest of the season. Corey Davis got hurt in a playoff game. A.J. Brown was in and out. I mean, the idea that the Titans didn't have injury problems last year, I have a hard time with. This offseason, they lost Arthur Smith as their play caller and number two wide receiver Corey Davis and tight end Jonnu Smith left in free agency. The Titans are one A.J. Brown injury away from having one of the NFL's worst pass-catching groups. The additions of Bud Dupree and DeNico Autry on defense should help, but overall, this looks like a team that's going to take a step back. And I don't disagree that there is a possibility that the Titans take a step back this year. I certainly thought last year there were signs of cracking. There were signs of them kind of falling downwards, taking a step back. But to 20th in the NFL? Like 20th? And this is where I go with this. It doesn't matter what the Athletic writes. A couple of years ago, the Titans got hot, and they asked Mike Vrabel a question about, hey, you guys have really gone up in the power rankings. And he made some pretty funny backhanded Mike Vrabel remark about maybe hopefully they can get into a better bowl game. Because power rankings don't matter in the NFL. Public opinion does not matter in the NFL, even though, as we learned last week with the ESPN analytics, it does affect how those things are decided because of Vegas win-loss totals, which, again, are completely subjective. The Dallas Cowboys are always going to have a higher win-loss percentage because more people want the Cowboys to do well because they have the most fans. But that's neither here nor there. The Titans are going to be a team this offseason that people are going to dump on. This is going to be a team that when you get preseason magazine publications, everybody is going to say the Titans will take a step back this year. And here's why they're going to say it. Not for the real reasons that the Titans might take a step back. Their lack of an impact in the 2020 draft class, I think, is a big deal. I think, you know, the fact that they lost that draft class, that eventually does catch up to you. The fact that they don't have Corey Davis, I'm not sure is as big of a deal as they're going to make it out to be. That they don't have a starting tight end today, that's kind of a big deal. But I think this all boils around one thing that people just don't want to say. And that is that most of America does not believe in Ryan Tannehill. I believe in Ryan Tannehill to an extent. But Tannehill's performance in the Baltimore playoff game, as I have mentioned many times, certainly leaves me questioning whether or not you can take that step with Ryan Tannehill. But that's ultimately what I think all of this circles around. The Titans don't have many star players. The one star player they have is at a position that everybody scoffs at. Now, we here locally don't scoff at it because the team that we cover, or if you're a fan, the team that you root for, is led by that star player. And I would argue that even though running backs are easier to find than other positions, it's also harder to win with the running back, and the Titans have done it now for 2 years. So I got a pretty good feeling you could do it this way. But ultimately, I think this all goes back to Tannehill. Arthur Smith was a good offensive coordinator. But it wasn't as if Arthur Smith revolutionized the game. I don't know anything about Todd Downing. But again, am I really going to sit here and say that you're going to be worse than the Dallas Cowboys now because you have a new offensive coordinator? Or because you don't bring back Corey Davis? I think this goes to the fact that most people around the country don't think much of Ryan Tannehill. And they won't say it. They will not put their foot down and they will not say the reason that I think the Titans are not going to be good this year is because I don't think Tannehill is good. But that's what I interpret this as. Everybody talks about how bad the Titans defense was last year and that the defense is probably going to be bad again this year. And I would agree. I have concerns on the defense. But I don't think it can be worse than it was last year. They brought in Bud Dupree. He can't be less, or I should say, he can't be more worthless than Beasley and Clowney because they were as worthless as you could be. They've got a whole new secondary, Janoris Jenkins and Caleb Farley and Christian Fulton and Elijah Molden and Kevin Johnson and Amani Hooker's going to start. Well, they can't be worse than they were last year. They cannot be worse on defense than they were last year. Who knows about the kicking game? They brought in the kid from Ohio State. I don't know. They may end up re-signing Goskowski. Again, I don't know. But could it be more questionable than it was last year when we questioned? They had long snapper problems, punter problems against Indianapolis. Like, again, can it be worse than it was last year? Probably not. And so I think this goes back to Tannehill. People won't say it because there's enough to argue the other side, that Tannehill is, in fact, a good quarterback. But when I see the Athletic put out a ranking, and again, I don't take a power ranking as gospel. I think that that is code for, I don't believe in Ryan Tannehill. Just like elevating Indianapolis, or thinking that Indianapolis will have a better team this year than they had last year, is code for, I think Carson Wentz is better than Phillip Rivers. That, by the way, is something that I don't believe. Just like I don't believe that Ryan Tannehill is so bad that he has you worse than the can't play defense Dallas Cowboys or the have no idea what they're doing at quarterback Washington football team or the Minnesota Vikings who have Kirk Cousins.
And I think that a lot of people in the national media, and this article does as well, focuses so much on the things that the Titans have lost on the offense in the offseason. You know, they mentioned Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. And, you know, let's say, God forbid, knock on wood, A.J. Brown does get injured. That's what this paragraph focuses on for the Titans.
First of all, anybody gets injured, if anybody gets injured, like any star player on any team gets injured, it's going to ruin your entire season.
Yeah, right. Saying, oh, well, they're one A.J. Brown injury away from having one of the NFL's worst pass-catching groups, I'm not going to knock the writing in The Athletic, but I think that's awfully presumptive to say that.
Sure. What are the Arizona Cardinals if Kyler Murray gets hurt?
Right. Who are the Vikings without Justin Jefferson? You have Dalvin Cook on offense.
No, the Vikings suck anyways, but that's neither. And that's probably my beef with the issue with that article or with that power ranking is that there's a lot of teams on here. Like, again, I don't think the Titans should be the top of the league, but there's a lot of teams on here that I just think there's a lot of teams in here that I think are bad. Like, I think the Washington's bad. I think Dallas is bad. I think Denver is bad. I think Minnesota is bad. I think Pittsburgh has the chance to be bad. I think there's a lot of teams on here that are bad. And I think that's probably what frustrates me. Miami, again, we're talking about quarterback play. We're talking about all these people don't think that the Titans can compete at quarterback. Or that's what I think this is code for, is that they don't believe in Tannehill. Miami pulled their quarterback out of games last year. And I'm not saying he's a bust, but I'm saying they don't know. And you're going to rank Miami at 12 and you're going to rank Tennessee at 20? No, it doesn't work like that for me. And I just get ready, because I think this offseason there is going to be a lot of negativity towards the Titans. 615-737-1025. If you have a Titans thought, get it in now. 615-737-1025. I think, you know, a couple of years ago when Mike Mularkey was the coach and this really hurt him, the expectations got raised when Peter King ranked them as like the fourth best team in the league right before the start of the offseason. And everybody had huge expectations. I think this year's the opposite. I think this is dump on the Titans offseason. There are going to be a lot of people that think the Titans are phony. 615-737-1025. Plus, Dominique Foxworth was asked what AFC team he doesn't think will make the playoffs that made the playoffs last year. You'll never guess who he picks. We'll get to that coming up next, plus your thoughts. And I made a bet on a team in the AFC that I think is going to be pretty bad. So we'll get to all of that. Stillman & Company, we are live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Of course, we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Hey, let me tell you, don't miss the cure for our friends' cystic fibrosis golf tournament May 15th at 12 Stones Golf Course in Goodlettsville. Some Titans retired players will be there and will be at the golf tournament's after party. Cure for Our Friends Golf Tournament still has a need for silent auction items. More information can be found at cureforourfriends.org. Thank you to Dad's Towing, Mitchell Motors, and Nashville Record Services for being the tournament sponsor for the 2021 Cure for Our Friends Cystic Fibrosis Golf Tournament.
Let's go to the AFC. Give me a team that made the playoffs last year that will not make it this season. Dominique.
I'm going to say the Tennessee Titans, maybe. I think that the Titans, their defense hasn't been very good, and they probably have gotten a little worse, and they have an offense that is a bit antiquated in the fact that they rely so heavily on the running back. They were able to replicate it, the success last year. It'll be hard to do again this year, but that division won't be very difficult, so there's a chance they could make it, but they certainly aren't going to make the wild card coming out of that division, I don't believe.
Dominique Foxworth right there. I think they play antiquated football. I, again, find that to be code word for I don't believe in Ryan Tannehill. Now, Caroline Fenton, you said last week you would not trade Ryan Tannehill and two first-round picks for Aaron Rodgers. Sounds like most of the national media, with the way they don't come out against Tannehill, it kind of feels like they would do that. Kind of feels like they don't believe in Tannehill. What do you make of, again, the ranking in The Athletic, and then Dominique Foxworth this morning on ESPN saying, Titans defense might be worse, antiquated football. Again, I think that's code word for Ryan Tannehill. What do you think?
See, I interpret that differently. I interpreted antiquated football in meaning that they rely so heavily on Derrick Henry that, you know, in the NFL, we see so much in the pass game that it's all throwing, and that the running back is just an undervalued position. When for the Titans, the most important player on that offense, maybe that team, is Derrick Henry.
Okay. Why would you overuse Derrick Henry?
Why? Because he can score touchdowns.
Right. But why would you over-rely on him?
I don't.
It'd be a bad thing.
That would be a bad thing,
no,
too?
No, and it'd be a bad thing.
I don't think it is a bad thing, but that's what I think that Dominique Foxworth meant by antiquated football.
Right.
If Derrick Henry can get to the end zone, if Derrick Henry can get you first downs, then relying on him is not a bad thing.
Sure. But you said that the reason that they don't believe that you can rely on that and that that is antiquated football is because they want to see a better what?
A better quarterback.
They want to see a better passing game. And what do we talk about when we talk about the passing game? That's my point. It's like that code. I think that sometimes people get worked up because they don't understand like what coded messages mean. And that I keep going back to this every time that I hear somebody talk about the Titans. The issues with the Titans are real. I see them every day just like you do. The Titans are one of these teams, we discuss this a lot. The Titans are one of these teams that never gets watched. They'll play, and we will predict this tomorrow or Wednesday before the schedule gets released, how many primetime games the Titans will get. I'm going to guess with the addition of a 17th game, the Titans are going to have 4 or 5 primetime games. Thursday, Monday, Sunday, those are your primetime games. So they only see the Titans play a couple of times a year. And it doesn't count when the Thursday night game is against Jacksonville, because even if you win that game by 55 points, nobody's going to care because you beat Jacksonville. So it's got to be one of these games where they play Green Bay like they did last year. They went on the road and they got housed. Or when they play in the playoffs, just in order to get people to believe in you. And honestly, when Ryan Tannehill plays in those games, and I'm not here to compare him to Andy Dalton, but Andy Dalton's biggest knock when he was in Cincinnati was that, hey, Monday night football game, Andy Dalton's not very good. Tannehill in the playoffs. And again, Tannehill made big throws against New England. He made big throws against Baltimore in order to beat them in 2019. And a lot of quarterbacks can't beat Kansas City. Josh Allen looked like a fish out of water in the second half of the AFC title game. I don't hear people talking about him the way that they talked about Ryan Tannehill after last year. But it's like this thing where you walk in with the negative connotation that you're not very good. People have convinced themselves that Tannehill's not very good. So then they see the playoff game this year against Baltimore where Derrick Henry stopped. He throws for 160. You lose. And it's like, can you really win with that guy? And I think that's a fair question. But they won't come out and say Tannehill's not any good, because the last time they came out and said Tannehill wasn't any good, the Titans went to the AFC title game. But that's what I think this ultimately is about. The real issues of the Titans are special teams, which are a mess and apparently never is going to get addressed by the coach. The offensive line, which, who's playing right tackle this year? The defense, which was abysmal last year. They elevated the coordinator. Those are the problems with the Titans. But again, I think everyone deep down inside kind of brings it back to Tannehill. Let me say this, though. So I made a bet. Tell me if you think this was a good bet. And again, this isn't in Caroline's, but one of my buddies is a very prominent tour manager in town and is a diehard Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And we were at the Preds game this weekend, and we made a bet. We made a bet on dinner at a nice restaurant. I bet that the Steelers will finish either 3rd or 4th in the AFC North this year. He's betting that they'll finish in the top 2. He's a diehard Steelers fan. I feel like I'm getting a free meal, because I don't see how the Steelers finish better than 3rd.
I don't know. I mean, are you... Okay, so who are you thinking would be in the top 2? The Ravens at the top?
I think that Cleveland will take a step back this year. I think Baltimore probably wins that division. Cleveland, and while I don't believe in Cincinnati, I mean, I think Pittsburgh's closer to Cincinnati than they are to Cleveland and Baltimore.
You're thinking Baltimore and Cleveland would finish above the Steelers?
Yeah, significantly.
See, I think that wild card there is going to be Cleveland.
Cleveland has a much better team, though. Like, much better. Like, who? The Steelers, no offensive line right now. Big Ben is about 60 years old.
If not older.
And he's fat. And, you know, like, when you're Tom Brady and you eat nothing but grass in the backyard every day, you can add a couple of years to your career. When you're Ben, I mean, Ben looked so done last year, but they couldn't get rid of him because his contract was too much. So they had to find some middle ground. They've got Juju as a number one receiver. Juju is very much not a number one receiver, as we saw when he hit the market and he didn't get a good offer. And on defense, they lost Bud Dupree, and they were not the same team last year on defense once they lost him. So now TJ Watt is not going to have the same guy on the other side, and I think they lost some DBs. I think Tomlin is a good coach. The saving grace here is I think Tomlin's a good coach. But I just don't think the Steelers are very good this year. That would be the team. As we're talking about these power rankings, mm-hmm. that would be the team that I would look at. The two teams I would look at, and I would say, man, I don't believe in this team this year. New Orleans, number one, because Drew Brees, I thought, was a lot. And they had to cut a lot of fat off the salary cap this year. And Pittsburgh, number two.
Overall, I would take your bet. I do. Because I don't see Pittsburgh finishing in the top two. I see Baltimore in that first spot. I think Baltimore is going to secure that first spot. And don't call me a homer, because I'm not. This is not a homer thing for me to say. But, I mean, I don't think the Bengals are even near their ceiling. They have a really good receiving core. Joe Burrow is coming back healthy. I think that the Bengals could also be a dark horse in the AFC North. So I would take your bet in that the Steelers would finish third or fourth.
I think there's a better chance the Steelers finish fourth than there is that the Steelers finish first. I don't think there's any chance they finish first.
I don't think so either.
The question is there a regression from Cleveland? And I don't know. Cleveland's going to play a harder schedule. More people are taking Cleveland seriously. The coach has now been out there for a year.
They have Jadeveon Clowney.
They got Clowney, and you know if there's anything he does, it's not make his team better. But I feel pretty good about my bet. I feel pretty good about it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. There is kind of a Twitter argument or a social media argument. I don't know. I'm not part of this anti-Jared Stillman Nashville Predators fan base Facebook group, but apparently it exists. But there's kind of like this fan sentiment that most people in the local media won't bring up. But I think now it's been disproven, so I'm going to put it out there, and I'm going to explain it. We'll do that coming up next, surrounding the Predators. Buying or selling a car is one of the biggest financial decisions you can make. That's why my friends at Edmunds will take the headaches and guesswork out of car shopping for you. They're pros, and they've been helping people like you and me for over 50 years. Edmunds.com was the first auto information website, and they are experts in buying or selling. Whether you're in the process, Edmunds will help you. Whether you're in it or you're about to start it, Edmunds has got you back. They've got tons of listings for new and used vehicles locally with deal ratings that will tell you if an offer is fair, and their free online tools help you budget and calculate financing or get a free appraisal if you're selling or trading in. They test drive over 300 new cars a year. So basically every car on the market they've got a review for. So it makes it very easy to eliminate cars right then and there. I can't test drive 300 cars. I can narrow it down to one or two that I like and go from there. And I think Edmunds does a pretty good job of that. They know cars. Again, in-depth reviews, they're knowledgeable, and of course, 300 test drives a year. So they've got it all covered. Whether you're just browsing or know exactly what you want, Edmunds gives you that extra boost of confidence. Visit Edmunds.com to get started. For cars, there's Edmunds.
I think it's a lot different than every year we made it to playoffs since I've been here. First of all, it's a different season, obviously, but I think the way we got in, the start we had, nobody was happy the way we played, and I'm really proud of the guys. Like, we definitely earned it the hard way. We worked extremely hard to clinch a playoff spot. Just looking back at the last, I don't know, 20 games, it felt like every game was so important. We were in the playoff race every game, and the guys really, like, everyone in our locker room, played really well, and I'm proud of the team. It took a lot of hard work, so it's exciting. We're definitely enjoying this one tonight.
Team captain Roman Josi, Predators win, and Roman Josi is team captain. He says, "Hey, this is different than any other year. I just want us all to all remember that, because they will reference the 2017 season, you know, a lot. Not the players, but the fans will reference the 2017 season. They knew for months they were making the playoffs. This is different. But there is kind of this, I don't know if it's a social media thing. I don't know. In fact, we just watched HBO Max has this documentary on QAnon and the believers of QAnon. And that's all social media, basically. It's just spreading misinformation, and then, you know, it's a conspiracy theory, and then someone buys into it, and then it gets amplified, and now it becomes out of this world crazy. You can't believe it, but it's happening. And not to say that this is similar to that, but there is always social media chatter. And I can't speak for other hockey markets. When I worked in Boston and the team wasn't playing well, now they ended up in the cup final that year, but when they weren't playing well, nobody pointed a finger at Zdeno Chara, who was the team captain. So maybe it's here. But there is talk when the team was not playing well or over the last couple of years that Roman Josi is not a good captain. That comes up. Now, it doesn't come up amongst the Nashville media. We don't have a lot of topics discussing whether or not Roman Josi is a bad captain. But I see the tweets. I see the posts on Facebook, or at least the ones that I can view. And I see people say, Roman Josi is just, he's not strong enough. He's not a strong enough leader to be captain of this team. And he doesn't have the most rah-rah personality. Now, at one point, when things were bad, Roman Josi did curse in a press conference. And everybody was like, oh my goodness. I can't believe it. Oh my goodness. But Roman Josi, again, is not the kind of guy you would envision going up to somebody in the locker room and just screaming his head off. That's not Roman. But I think now we can lay to bed the idea when your buddy or some guy you see on Twitter gets mad when things aren't going well and wants to say Roman Josi's a bad captain. Roman is signed for the next 7 years after this year. My guess is at some point over the next 7 years, that's going to come up. Somebody's going to say that he's not a great captain. And I will say, let's point back to 2021. Because this team very easily could have crumbled. Roman Josi certainly got up and did a lot of the talking when they weren't winning. When they started maybe to turn it around, Roman Josi came on this show and discussed it. Roman Josi backed up the coach when we asked him about that. And so I thought it was only fair that, to put into perspective, again, not right now, because nobody, when things are going well, nobody is pointing a finger at Roman Josi. In fact, everyone's saying Roman Yossi's a great player. But maybe we should value his leadership or what he brings to the captaincy, or maybe at least recognize that he might be a pretty good captain. In fact, I asked the coach today about Roman's leadership because I think it's important that you all hear it. Here's what John Hines had to say about his captain.
Yeah, John, with the whole turnaround this season, how valuable was Roman's leadership throughout, not just, you know, the bad times turning into the good times, but also following through with the good times? How important was he in that room for the entire team?
Roman was big. You know, he's, he cares. I mean, Roman really cares, you know, similar to Pex. You know, he cares about the organization. They want to win. Quality guy. True professional. You know, Josi is one of these guys too, where he's a highly talented player, but work ethic and practice, what he does in the off season, how he prepares himself, how he eats, his lifestyle. I mean, this guy's totally dialed into winning. And when things don't go well, you know, he brunts and takes on a lot of the responsibility. So I think it's been important for him too. That's the crucible of leadership. You know, where when things don't go well, now your true character comes out, and now you've got to stick to your convictions. And you know, you've got to understand, you got to take some heat, you got to have some hard conversations with people. But, you know, when you believe in what you're doing and when you're a captain of a team in that situation, you have to handle things both ways. You have to handle it on the ice with the way that you play, but you also have to handle it internally with other players or the coaches. And I think Roman, since I've gotten to know him coming here last January to now, he's really tried to grow his leadership skills and understanding what it is, and I think he's done a good job this year. And you don't come out of these situations if you don't have your captain and some of your, you know, your leadership guys pushing in the right direction in the hard times.
Roman Josi was the one who got up in front of the media when things were bad. My guess is John Hines kind of just told you he was the one who got up in front of the team when things were bad. John Hines could have very easily avoided the question if he didn't think that Roman's leadership was that steady by talking about how much he cares or talking about how hard he works or talking about how good of a player he is. But he didn't. He said, when you get out of times like this, you need players like that. You need a captain like that. His leadership skills have grown. Let me say this. I know somebody who was a part of the team in their cup final run and a year or so after that. And I asked him. I said, when I see what the fans are saying about sometimes maybe, is Roman Josi a good captain? Or Josi's not strong enough? And I see it. And instead of just blindly arguing back, which sometimes I think some people in the media do, and I think some people in the national media have kind of ignored that fan sentiment that comes out when things aren't going well because they feel like maybe it's beneath them, or they argue it just saying, you don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't going to do that. I'm not in that locker room. Yeah, I'm not on those planes. I'm not in those meetings. I'm not any of that. So for me to sit here and say, Roman Josi's a good captain, I think would be somewhat irresponsible. Now, I'm not going to say he's a bad captain because I don't know that either. So I asked somebody who would know. And I said, shoot me straight. Is Roman a good captain? I don't need to be told that Roman's a good guy. I know that. I don't need to be told that Roman's a good player. I know that. Is Roman a good captain? And that guy told me that Roman Josi was the kind of guy who's willing to have any conversation that is necessary for the team. That at any time, whether it's with a coach, whether it's with a player, whether it's with a group of players, Roman Yossi's willing to do it. He's always willing to put himself first, or excuse me, always willing to put the team ahead of himself, put the team first, and he is a solid captain. And this is a guy who would know and has been around a lot of good captains. So I heard that, and I said, you know what? Now I can say freely to the fans that when they argue that Roman's not a good captain, I can say, no, I talked to somebody who would know, and they say that he's not. But you heard what John Hines said right there. And I think the one thing that is true, you don't get yourself out of that without good leadership. You do not. It was so negative around here. And the only guy, Roman Josi has more job security than every single person at Bridgestone Arena or with the Predators. Literally every single person. Because, for example, they have an owner and a chairman, but the owner and the chairman can be changed. We saw a change at chairman a couple years ago. You can fire a team president, a general manager, a coach. You can fire those guys, and you may have to pay them, but you can still fire them and bring in somebody new. And I guarantee you, I would be stunned. I shouldn't say guarantee you because I don't know. I'd be stunned if guys like that have 7 more years on their contracts. I'd be stunned if they have 7 years and what is it, like $9 million for Roman Josi? I'd be stunned if they had contracts like that. Roman Josi also has a no movement clause and he counts against the team salary cap. You can hire a new general manager every year. Just keep firing them, firing. It doesn't count against your salary cap. Roman does. So he is the most immovable person in the franchise. He will be here the next 7 years unless he wants to leave. So again, I don't think it's a humongous pressing issue today because they're winning. And when they're winning, everybody's feeling good. But I think it's important to take the lessons from when you win and apply them to when things are not going well. And so while I maybe have thought in my head, you know, hey, is Roman leading this team good? I wasn't going to say it. And I talked to people who would know. And I asked the coach. And now I look at what this team's doing. And I will say, the next time some Looney Tune gets on Facebook or gets on Twitter, and I know we can all pretend like we don't read those things or we don't care, but we do. The next time some Looney Tune says Roman Josi's a bad captain, just think about what John Hines said about him and think about the turnaround that he was the leader of as one of the biggest turnarounds in franchise history. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Again, tonight is a big one. 615-737-1025 here on Stillman and Company. We'll hit the headlines with Caroline. We'll do that coming up next. And, of course, we'll take your thoughts. I believe our phone lines are down, which means hit the text line. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Hey, by the way, join us tomorrow from 10 to 6 at 3rd and Home, which is basically right next to First Horizon Park, as Darren Donick and Chase and Stillman and Company broadcast live. We'll be back at 3rd and Home. Great place. We're there for the draft. The Sounds have their home opener tomorrow night, so come celebrate baseball being back in Nashville. You can grab game swag and enter to win tickets to an upcoming Sounds home game. Get your tickets now for the Nashville Sounds at sounds.com, excuse me, at nashvillesounds.com, and tune into Sounds games this season on ESPN 94.9. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming the Game Nashville app. Stillman and Company, tonight the Predators take on the Carolina Hurricanes. It's a meaningless game, just for all intents and purposes. It's absolutely meaningless. Rod Brendamore is resting half of his lineup tonight, and I think especially meaningless considering that both teams know they're playing each other next, so you don't want to show anything, and neither coach will. But it's not meaningless from the standpoint that it could, in fact, be Pecorine's last game. I asked the coach about that today off the jump, about whether or not it would be Pekka's last game. But we'll get to that in about 10 minutes. First, though, let's go to your phone, 615-737-1025. Text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caroline Fenton, what's in there?
Donovan texted in and said, I used to say Roman Josi was not a good captain, and I have to take that back. He has done a marvelous job these last few months, bringing this incredible season to where we're at this moment. I've also been saying this team is worth hanging with because you could see it coming together, a chemistry that's hard to find, and when you find it, it can bring you a championship.
Sure, I don't think that this chemistry can bring you a championship. There are a lot of teams that are close. There are a lot of teams that play together. There are a lot of teams that play hard. There are a lot of teams that do a lot of things, and ultimately, with most things in sports, sometimes you just got to be talented. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're talented. The Kansas City Chiefs, they're talented. That Titan team that was tight, 9-7, went all the way to the AFC title game a couple years ago, they ran into Patrick Mahomes. And ultimately, at the end of the day, they had no pass rush, and they had no secondary, and then it turned into Patrick Mahomes versus Tremaine Brock. You're not going to win that. So I'm not saying that the Predators don't have a shot. I'm not saying the Predators aren't talented. But I think there's a certain level of talent. And a lot of these teams in the league right now seem to have it. Colorado has it. Vegas, I think, probably has it. The two teams in your division, Carolina and Tampa Bay, have it. You can argue at the top end, Florida might have a little bit of it. You just simply don't have that. But I do think that the chemistry on this team is solid. I think there's a solid foundation in place. I just now think there are some other issues that need to get revealed. But it is time now for the headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman and Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
What we got?
So we need to talk about the Kentucky Derby and what the heck is going on surrounding Medina Spirit. There is a lot of drama surrounding the Kentucky Derby. So Medina Spirit, for those who don't know, he won the Kentucky Derby, the horse. But that victory is in jeopardy after he failed the post-race drug test. And it feels funny calling a horse he, it, she, I don't know, the horse. The horse failed the post-race drug test. There was an excessive amount of betamethasone in the horse's system, which is often used as a muscle relaxer, pain reliever for horses. Bob Baffert, Hall of Fame horse trainer, also as Medina Spirit's trainer, denied any wrongdoing. He said he had no idea how the horse would have had any sort of drugs in its system. Previously, one of Baffert's horses had a positive drug test, and Baffert's response to that was, a groom urinated in the horse's stall after taking cough medicine, and the horse ate some of the hay that the groom urinated on, which just adds such an interesting level to this whole story. Sure. Now, this is a horse separate from Medina Spirit. This is a different circumstance. But it's just looking like a weird, odd, slippery slope for Bob Baffert and the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, I tweeted this out yesterday. Bob Baffert is basically saying, I understand I don't have any proof of my innocence, but you have to trust me that I didn't cheat. And I have a hard time with that. And I tweeted out yesterday, I said, it feels like the Kentucky Derby is being run by Bud Selig, but apparently it's not. Churchill Downs immediately suspended Bob Baffert, and that is not easy for them to do. I mean, Baffert is a huge draw, but I really do think that this calls everything that Bob Baffert has achieved in his career, I think it calls it into question. I mean, this, it may not get the pub because, again, these are horses. And, like, how much do people really care about a horse trainer? But it does seem very Lance Armstrong-esque with the level of cheating it feels like we're hearing about from Bob Baffert. And I think it's one of those things where, like, to me, the burden of proof lies on Baffert. If there was no positive test and you were to say, I think Bob Baffert is cheating, I think he's cheating, you know, drugging up horses, you would say, well, but what's your proof that he does it? Well, now we have a positive test. And we have several positive tests over the career of Bob Baffert.
And very strange explanations and excuses for those positive tests.
It's hard for me not to say Bob Baffert's a cheater. Now, I like Bob Baffert, the guy. I mean, like, you know, when you're in Louisville and you're on the radio in Louisville, you get to know these people pretty well because that's kind of their home territory. I like Bob Baffert. Bob Baffert's been good to me. But let me just tell you straight up, I think Bob Baffert's a cheater. And I need Bob Baffert to prove that he's a cheater, and he doesn't get conspiracy theory level nonsense that would make me say, so you're not drugging up your horses. So, again, I mean, this goes back to the whole, what was it, Brett Boone or somebody? You know, you go back to those steroid era baseball players, it's like 13 home runs, 16 home runs, 13 home runs, league MVP. Like, ah. You know, maybe those 51 home runs Brady Anderson hit, like, yeah, you know, and that's kind of how I feel right now about Bob Baffert.
Yeah, I also have to applaud Churchill Downs for having such a quick and pretty intense response to this, saying he's suspending him immediately.
Churchill Downs is a gaming company. That's the one thing people have to understand. They're a gaming company. If you're a gaming company and you let something like this happen and you look negligent, you can get sued by every bettor. And that's where it becomes a little bit more serious. And I see, like, Adam Silver always talks about the NBA and embracing gambling, and maybe they should. But the NBA is not a gaming company. The you know, Major League Baseball is not a gaming company. Do they have partners who are sports books? Sure. But there's a big difference. Churchill Downs is a gaming company, and I think that's why Churchill Downs had to immediately suspend Baffert here. What's next?
A little bit of Titans news. TD reported today that Titans waived tight end Parker Hess, outside linebacker Nate Orchard, and long snapper Matt Orzech. So,
surprising that last week John Robinson was pumping the fact that they had all these great tight ends, including Parker Hesse. You know, hey, we like this guy. We got Ferkser and Jeff Swaim and Jared Pinkney from Vanderbilt and Parker Hesse, and we feel good at tight end. What did Parker Hesse do in the last 4 days? Those are all minor guys. Matt Orzech, the backup long snapper. I do wonder, though, with COVID protocols, you know, are they going to have another COVID practice squad like they had last year? My gut tells me no, but I think it would be in the Titans' best interest. I know they signed Morgan Cox, the long snapper from Baltimore, but I would try to keep, if they can, Matt Overton, who was their long snapper last year. I would try to keep him around, or keep him on the practice squad, lives in Nashville. I would try to keep Matt Overton in the fold because he's a great long snapper, former Pro Bowl long snapper, and he did a great job last year. Certainly Orzech never, I don't think he ever played a game. So that's at least worth noting. What else?
You know, we're talking about cheating and condemning it so much in the Kentucky Derby, and there is also maybe another little bit of a cheating scenario going on at the University of Alabama. Henry To'o, former Tennessee linebacker, entered the transfer portal and then just announced this past weekend that he was signing with Alabama. And shortly after, he posted a photo on his Instagram of, like, a beautiful red car. I don't know if it was new or not, with a caption, Roll Tide. So he deleted it very shortly after, right after he posted it.
But are we sure that's real?
I
heard somebody say that was fake.
It may have been fake.
I think that was fake.
It could have been.
I think it was fake. I think you got duped.
Maybe I did.
I think you got duped on this
one. I could have. But it's very interesting that those things are circling around there. Who wants to get Alabama in trouble?
So here's the difference. First of all, again, I think that's fake.
Okay.
So maybe look that up. But secondly, this goes back to the Baffert thing, right? Like, that picture to me, that's not like a positive drug test where, okay, now you got to prove that you're innocent. To me, that's not the idea, you know, of, oh, Alabama player got a car. I wonder how they're all cheating. And again, I don't even know if the story's real or not. But that is not proof that Nick Saban is running this humongous cheating underground college football factory. That, again, it's not the same as like a positive test or an FBI wiretap or
it's something. It's not tangible of that. Evidence that that's where it came from. Correct.
Sure. And
if it's real.
I just can't live in, I can't live in that headspace. I cannot live under, like, I can't live under, like, these assumptions that are made of people's guilt without there being something. And I do worry, you know, we're talking about the Roman Yossi being a bad captain thing. It's like it's not hard for somebody to get on Facebook and say Roman Yossi's a bad captain. And then all of a sudden people start repeating it, and then somebody else repeats it, and then all of a sudden people believe it. You know, that's it's not hard. And I guess, again, I watched that whole QAnon documentary, so I'm kind of more into that, you know, the fake stuff that gets out there and then it propagates people's minds. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, my God, is Wayfair selling kids? And
don't get me started on that one.
But that's my point, is like when there's no proof and then it turns into, well, you don't have any proof that Alabama isn't cheating. Well, I don't need proof that Alabama isn't cheating. It's on you to produce facts or proof that Alabama is cheating, and so far we don't have any of that. But I would look up that Henry Toa Toa picture.
Yeah, I will. I don't think that's real. I'll confirm on that. More Tennessee news. They just announced today that Lindsey Nelson Stadium will be at full capacity for the Arkansas series this weekend, which is huge. Huge for Tennessee baseball. Huge for a lot of income. Arkansas is the number one team in the country. Tennessee's now ranked number four. A number one four matchup with full capacity in Knoxville this weekend, I think, is going to be huge in terms of income generation, but also really huge because this will be the first full capacity game since Tennessee has really started being a powerhouse in baseball, what, last season? So huge for the fan base and growing the fan base.
I think they played like 10 games last year, so I'm not sure I'd count that as powerhouse. But, I think that's good. I'm not smart enough to figure out like what capacity restrictions should be, and everybody seems to have different opinions on it, so all I can say is I got my shots, and I feel comfortable going to a game. So, you know what? Good for Tennessee baseball, though. I think it's good for the area that they're good. I think it's good for college baseball. I think it's good for Vandy. And I think it's good for baseball here. Those are headlines with Caroline. Coming up next, tonight's game is somewhat meaningless in terms of the result for the Predators, but it certainly is not meaningless because it could be Pekka Rinne's last game. What did John Hines have to say about that possibility? We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.